the first parak. Divrei Amos, Asher Hayav Anokdim Mitakawa Asher Chaza Al Yisrael, Bime Uziyah Melech Yehuda, Ubime Yaravam Ben Yoash Melech Yisrael, Shnasayim Lifnei Harahash. I should warn you also, for those who are coming in new with Amos, that our style has been for Hosea to really stick to the text and try to do a close read. If there are any suggestions at any point, please do let me know. But that's the assumption going in. The words of Amos, who was in the Nokdim, among the Nokdim, among the shepherds, as we said, from Tekoa, that city which may have been in the south or in the north, Asher Chaza, right? Chaza, a term for chazon, for vision, Al Yisrael, on Israel, the north, Bimei Uziyah Melech Yehuda, Bimei Yeravim Ben Yoash Melech Yisrael, during the days of Uziyah as the king of Yehuda in the south, and Yeravim Ben Yoash the king in the north, those times of plenty that we just described, Shnasayim Lifnei Hara'ash, 2 years before the earthquake, right, the great noise, literally. But Rash is earthquake. Yeah, doesn't it ever? This is a good way to start a book.
Wow.
Right? If you wanted to write a book, right, you send your opening page to the publisher, right, are you interested in this? And it starts out, you know, Amos, who was the Navi, whatever, well, 2 years before the earthquake. That makes you want to read the next sentence. The problem is we don't actually know what earthquake he's talking about.
We can't place it.
Clearly, the reader of Amos is supposed to know what earthquake this is. To the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, this is a known event. We have some guesses. We're never short on guesses. Where there's a pasuk, there is a medrash, and where there's a medrash, there's always hope. We'll see what we can do with this earthquake that's being described here. But that's something we need to know more about. He's prophesying 2 years before the earthquake. Vayomar, and he said, I'm not done with the first pasuk yet, but I want to do the second pasuk also because the two really go together as the introduction to the parak. Vayomar, and he said, Hashem mitzion yishag, God will roar from Tzion. Umirushalayim yitain kolo, he will give voice from Yerushalayim. Ve'avlu ne'os haroim, the ne'ot, like na'e, to be pleasant, the pleasant places, the pastures perhaps, of the shepherds will mourn, or be destroyed, is one rendition I've seen, via Vesh Rosh HaKarmel, and the head of the Carmel, as in Mount Carmel, will dry up. That's his opening segment. Then he's going to go off in an entirely different direction. But that's our introduction to Hosea. So let's see if we can figure out what we're talking about here. Part of this idea of the earthquake, before we get to that, opening word. Divrei Amos. Radak quotes the view of Chacham of Chazal that the word Divrei is a loaded word. When you open with the word Divrei, you're already saying something. I gave you references there on the sheet. You do not need to look them up. But other Nevi'im that start out with Divrei that Radak mentions, Yirmiyah, right? Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Hilkiyahu. And Divrei Kohelet ben David. Those are some of the Nevi'im who start with the word Divrei. So Radak says that, it's not this Radak that you have in source number 5, we'll get to that one. But Radak says that the word Divrei indicates that the Nevuah is about the Navi. It's the story of the Navi himself. Sometimes you have a Navi who will speak and speak and speak, but really won't tell you anything about himself. Ovadia, for example. He doesn't speak that much, only has one parak. But you could read your way through Ovadia and never know anything about him. Right? You could read your way through Nahum and never know anything about him. There are many Nevi'im who are apparently entirely divorced from their Nevuah. That's not the case with Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah's self is very much wrapped up in the whole Nevuah, where the things that happen to Yirmiyah make it into the book. Kohelet talks from his own experience, and his entire book is about the things that he went through. And so with Amos, Amos' life is very much a part of his Nevuah. So it's divrei Amos. These aren't just the words spoken by Amos. These are actually the words of Amos about Amos. That's number one. Number two, take a look, please, at Yoel, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Tet Zayin, chapter 4, sentence 17. This sentence should look familiar. Right before Amos. Yeah. Look familiar? It's the same phrase. Hashem Mitzion Yishag Mirushalayim Yitain Kolot. You can look at it on two pages in stereo. Right? What do we make of that? Plagiarism, right. Sorry? Right. Yeah. It's two Nevi'im using the same words to describe what they're seeing. The Gemara says that you can't have two Nevi'im say exactly the same thing. And if two Nevi'im say exactly the same thing, then, they actually says that it's a false Navi. Oh. They talk about it when Ahav is tricked into going to war, and he was supposed to know that it was a trick because Nevi'im don't prophesy with the same words. He's supposed to not listen when two Nevi'im say the same thing because he was supposed to learn Gemara. They're not supposed to speak with the same words. But it seems that that's an entire message rather than just, six words, seven words in a pasuk. This, we're told, is parallel because they're envisioning the same punishment, and they're envisioning Hashem roaring. The image of Hashem roaring is popular in Tri-Asar. We saw it in Hosea also. If you go back before Yoel to Hosea, Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11, sentence 10. Hashem is depicted as roaring there as well. The idea of roaring is Hashem roaring against his enemies. If you take a look at source number 6, I brought you a medrash there from Shmos Rabbos. Right above that you see some other places in which God is described as roaring. But the sages said in the name of Rabbi Hoshea, Belza asked Rabbi Akiva, where does this noise originate? This mysterious noise. The noise he's commenting on is a longer discussion, but I'm going to leave that for now. Where does this noise originate? Rabbi Akiva replied, when Hashem looks upon the idolatrous temples and those worshippers and the way they are undisturbed, and he sees his house ruined and given into the hands of idolaters, it is as though he is angered and he roars. And immediately the heavens and earth generate noise. As it is written, he will roar from Zion, he will give his voice from Yerushalayim. What does Israel do? As it were, he, Hashem, protects them, despite the roaring. As that text continues, and God is a shelter for his nation. That's where it is in Yoel. So the idea is Hashem is frustrated at the existence of idolatry. And that's this roar that Hashem gives forth, which so many Nevi'im witness.
Are we to understand that it's not exactly an earthquake? It is, in fact, a great noise that causes a kind of trembling?
Possibly. Malbim makes that suggestion. Malbim says this is a description of the Rash. The Rash he mentioned in the first pasuk is being described here as Hashem roaring forth. That's certainly one take. The earthquake, though, this is a perfect segue for me, thank you. The earthquake is actually hinted at later on. Take a look at Zechariah, please. Perek Yud Dalet, chapter 14, sentence 5. It's the end of Tri-Asar. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi are your last three. you're using the JPS, it's 721 at the bottom. This is part of Zechariah's ultimate image, the end of days image. So he says, V'nastem gei harai, right? You shall flee to the valley among the mountains. Ki agia gei harim el atzal, the valley shall reach to the place, atzal or atzel. V'nastem, and you will flee. Kasher nastem mipnei haraash, as you fled from before the earthquake or the great noise. Bimei uziyah melech Yehuda. Which is exactly. So there is reference to this Rash in Zechariah. Zechariah is long after Amos, to be quoting this story. Right? Zechariah is the first generation of, or the second generation of, the second Beis HaMikdash. So you have a good, solid 170 to 200 years, roughly, between the two of them. And yet Zechariah is talking about this event as though it's a familiar event. Today, that's not unusual. But today we keep written records and everything else that you don't necessarily have surviving in those days. I mean, we know about earthquakes that happened in Siberia in the beginning of the 19th century, the end of the 18th century. But we have written records of it. That's why we remember. Otherwise, there's no way in the world we would know. On the other hand, this is the same nation rather than, you know, Siberia versus Canada.
You mean in 100 years we won't know who Sidney Crosby is?
Everyone will know who Sidney Crosby is. Regrettably.
You were rooting for the Americans?
You bet.
Why you guys?
It's not a matter of that. You can't. America, you can take the guy out of New York. You can't take New York out of the guy.
Is this the earthquake that actually damaged the second temple?
Can't be. Can't be. If he's 2 years before it, this is first base.
So that's the first base coming. That's the time of the prophecy, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here he's envisioning some kind of major earthquake, which or great. To say great noise raises a problem because Zechariah is clearly familiar with something more than just Hashem roaring out of Zion that he's referring to there.
But maybe
fled
that,
from before it.
But it could be that great noise caused the trembling, right?
But wouldn't that be more than a one time? That'd be like an ongoing.
Well, unless, I mean, if you were to look at it as an overflow of divine rage, in other words, Hashem got so fed up with the idolaters that he roared out of Zion and there was an earthquake, you know, that would be a way.
The tremors.
Exactly. And that could be, that could easily be what we're looking at, that's that kind of a description. One last point on this. This image there in Pasuk Ben, sentence 2. The Avlu Na'ot Haro'im V'Yavesh Rosh HaKarmel. These areas drying up or being ruined. It's an interesting range of terrains. Where do shepherds graze their animals?
Pastures.
Right, the pastures, the flatlands, right, the grasslands. It's odd when Moshe suddenly finds himself on Har Sinai, and the Medrash explains that it's because he sees the snare and the sheep ran away, and that's how he ended up on the mountain, right? Because shepherds don't go to mountaintops, you go to graze in the flatlands. Sorry? Yes, in they do. The range of terrains is interesting here. By the way, I jumped over source number 5, but that's the Radak connecting you to the Pasuk in Zechariah. You can take a look at it. You'll see it there. But the Rosh HaKarmel is understood to refer to the top of Mount Carmel. Further, as we'll see, the idea of the top of Mount Carmel is understood that it's a secure location. It's a defensible location. We'll see that later in Amos, at the end of Amos, in the 9th chapter. It's also known as a peak and a lookout point. If you take a look at source number 7, they talk about the definition of dusk in Halacha as the time it would take you to go to mikvah if you started when the sun was at the top of Mount Carmel, and then by the time you finish, the sun will have set. there's this the association with this as a major peak. If you want to see where Miriam's well is, ascend to the top of the Carmel and look out, and you'll see something like a sieve in the sea. That's Miriam's well. What that means is a really good question. But the idea is that the Carmel is a great peak, and the Otaroim are these low-lying areas, and all of it is going to be in trouble on the day that Hashem roars, no matter where you are. Yes?
Doesn't even call it Carmel. It says the best of the fertile fields.
Ah, so I'm coming to that. Excellent. One way to read this is the top of Mount Carmel, which fits very well, because Rosh HaCarmel is in fact Mount Carmel elsewhere in Tanakh as well. So that works. As a matter of fact, I gave you a reference on your sheet to Shir HaShirim 7:6, Roshech Alayach HaCarmel, which is understood by many to mean your head is like, you know, like the beauty of Mount Carmel. However, Rashi has a different read on this. He says the Ro'im doesn't mean the shepherds. The Ro'im actually means the kings and the leaders. The pleasant places, the homes, the palaces of the leaders, that's Ne'ot HaRo'im. And Rosh HaCarmel are the mighty cities. And then there's a third possibility, which is to read this as the beautiful places, which you mentioned them that they do that. You have the Art Scroll or the JPS? It could be taken as an expression of beauty, in which case it's parallel with Ne'ot HaRo'im, Ne'ot like Na'eh, the beautiful places of the shepherds. But the problem is the word Rosh. Mm-hmm. Rosh HaCarmel works if it's the top of a mountain. I don't know what you do with Rosh HaCarmel.
It's the best Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Could be.
Can I say what I have in the
Yeah, please. Yeah, that's Rabbi Elman's book, by the way. I quoted him before.
So it says that top of the Carmel, even Mount Carmel's peak, its most densely vegetated section will become dry, according to Malbim. Mount Carmel is located beside the modern-day city of Haifa. Others say Carmel does not denote a particular location, but is a general term for all fertile lands.
Exactly, so there you have the both possibilities. Thank you. But the idea that, to go back to the first point that he has there, even Mount Carmel, which is this sort of hard-to-reach place and is dense with vegetation, to add that point also that he quotes from Malbim, even that will be subject to ruin on the day that Hashem roars forth. And the idea of the earthquake, I mean, I keep reading earthquake, and thinking about Chile and thinking about Haiti and everything else. It makes it a little more real in terms of thinking about what he's actually envisioning. But it's a devastation from which no one is immune. Every location, every place is going to be vulnerable and ultimately laid waste. All right, I think that's a good spot to halt for now. We have the introduction. We have a lot more to see here, obviously. So tune in next week.